At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
And we're joined now by retail expert James Bourke from James Bourke and Associates. James, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much indeed. Great to be on.
We're talking today about the grocery sector and the future of it. And it's the sector, of course, that boomed during the pandemic. But I want to begin by putting the following to you, a story from Reuters. It says online grocery sales in the UK fell 2.6% in the 4 weeks to July 11th, the first ever fall. Online share of the grocery market fell from 13.4% to 13.3%. So what, James, do you make of that?
I think we need to go back to last year and that awful crisis, I suppose, that people were put into initially. And I think a lot of people were scared to go out, didn't want to go out, weren't comfortable. And where they could, they went online. Consumers went online in very, very large numbers. And I think that was never sustainable because, in effect, in most markets, the online shopping share doubled for food. In other categories, it went even to much higher levels, but it doubled for food, which probably was an artificial high. And I think there's a bit of settling going on. We're not going back to 2019 levels by any stretch of the imagination. I heard or read a comment that Amazon made, and they were saying, look, we're probably between 5 and 10 years in terms of our attitude to online shopping in general ahead now. And that has happened over 18 months. So I'm not overly concerned about this little blip that is coming, because I think probably we were being artificially propelled online last year and there were very compelling reasons not to go outside the door. Whereas now there's a more natural settling occurring, but I think we'll be still way, way ahead of where the market was naturally moving to.
This is so interesting to me because obviously the narrative around society at the minute is that we're going to be doing more and more business online. So when you see a figure like this where things seem to be kind of plateauing in the UK, it almost feels unusual. I mean, what you say about the doubling of online's market share applies here too. I'll just give you the Irish figures. It doubled in a year, basically, where online was 2.7% of the grocery market in January 2020. And a year later, online sales were 5.2% of the grocery market. So obviously, we're at a much lower level than online penetration is in the UK. But it is much higher now than it was pre-COVID. Why do you think it's going to plateau? Why wouldn't it just keep growing? I mean, haven't people loved the online experience? Don't they want to stick with it?
Yes, and I'll just relay a story to you, and it's a 2019 story. And I was talking to a store manager that was working with one of the chains, and we were talking about trade in general, and he was saying, look, my online share for his branch was 3%. He said, I'm losing money at that level. It's simply not big enough for me to make a profit at that level by the time I pick and deliver and all of that. I'm not getting the efficiencies. However, the only growth he was getting was online. So there was no fear that he was going to get rid of it. Customers wouldn't allow him anyway. But I suppose you have that backdrop, first of all, that in the Irish market, we have been slower to maybe embrace the online grocery shopping. And there's probably a historic preference to touch and to feel and to smell. I think we've more room to grow. I think there is a view globally that food shopping, while there are many manifestations now, particularly in the USA, that food shopping, there will always be some limits, that there will be a higher percentage of people that simply, maybe I won't use the word enjoy because not everybody does enjoy going grocery shopping, but perhaps find it an easier way to do it than online. Some people will be absolutely cut out for online shopping and they never need go inside the door of a supermarket. Others probably at this stage of evolving are just not at that point yet. And Ireland has been remarkably behind where that global pattern was. But a lot of people would even be startled by the UK figure, the 13% figure, to say, actually, is that all it is? Now, it's large numbers. And during the pandemic, you will remember some of the large retailers in the UK where they were doing, you know, tens of thousands of deliveries per day. And I remember reading one newspaper headline where they had to take on another 40,000 drivers. So the scale, even though the percentage is small, the number of people involved is very big. It has driven in Ireland as well. Big changes. Some of the retailers here, like Dunnes, had no online shopping before the pandemic. I think that worked against them initially when consumers rushed to use online shopping. There was no solution in Dunnes. They now have a very robust and good solution, but they were slower on that. And I think initially when the consumer, those that wanted to go online, they went to the retailers, the Tesco's and the Super Values, who had solutions. But all retailers struggled initially, you know, to cope with the volumes that were there.
Yeah, and I mean, the other ones to mention, of course, are Aldi and Lidl. I mean, I spoke to Lidl, it's probably a year ago, and I was sort of asking them about what their plans were for online. And essentially what they said was, look, it's a very small part of the market. And really, our focus is more on what we're doing in stores. And we know they've been opening, you know, plenty of new stores over the last while.
And I think we've seen some movement in that in Aldi in particular with their click and collect, and they seem to be adding more stores to that, which is a kind of a midpoint. And then they also have a delivered option. You can shop up to €70 and somebody will bring it on a little scooter or motorbike to your door as part of that. So I think, you see, if you asked anybody these questions 3 years ago, no, that won't work. No, that won't work. And suddenly necessity has prompted these live trials, which have been fulfilling for some retailers and have driven, because the consumer behavior has changed dramatically. And our attitude to online, our attitude to local, our attitude to actually shopping online with the producer direct, they've all changed dramatically. And producers are reporting very nice sales from consumers buying to them directly. Again, you know, we do a lot of work in that area as well. And 2-3 years ago, if a producer said, you know, and I'm going to put up my own shop and I'm going to have credible business, and I'd be saying to them, good luck with that one, because 2 or 3 years ago, that would have been really difficult for a producer to do, required huge amount of work. The consumer's now in the right place. I think a credible online food proposition, whether it's a retailer or a producer, it's a much easier door to push open at this point.
So in sort of 10, 15 years time, where do you think we'll be at then here in Ireland? I mean, we're kind of 5-6% now, which still, given everything we've just been talking about shopping local and all the rest, you mentioned some producers have got direct-to-consumer offerings. Still really is striking how low it is. And I do, I accept that there will be, you know, a big part of the experience is that you want to, you know, hold the products yourself or whatever. But you would have to think we'd be more like the UK 13, 15% in 10 years time.
I think if you look at what's happening globally, it's certainly conceivable that a quarter at least of shopping for food would be done online in the future. But you see, the last 18 months have demonstrated to us that other factors sometimes can accelerate that and change it enormously. But if you ask me to pick a figure now, I would say, you know, go forward 5 to 7 years and you probably may see a quarter. But I would be very much, very strongly of the view there will always be a role for physical shopping. And the more innovative retailers that you hear now so much about, retail entertainment, those retailers that bring the experience to life. And if you look at some of the retailers in particular, that's part of their, well, the Super Value model, we'll say, and the Dunnes model in particular, we've seen lots of changes in more recent years, and some in the case of Super Value historically, where the butcher is there, where the counter is there, where you don't see that in other retailers. It's the opposite with the discounters. You've seen Dunnes dramatic changes with Dunn's over the last decade, where the likes of the James Whelan Butcher, the Sheridan's cheese model, this is this kind of market within the supermarket effect. And that's part of their strategy to say, look, keep coming in. This is an exciting and stimulating environment. And I suppose to some degree, and my earlier career many, many years ago at this stage was in Supergwin. And sometimes if I'm slightly tongue in cheek to say, well, look, all this was happening back in that era. And this is now we're seeing a reinvention of some of that back to your Supergwin sausage days and stuff like that. But that's in the past. But what we are seeing is several of the retailers placing an emphasis on counter as part of their strategy of skill, of bakeries, of butchers. And then others taking an alternative strategy say, no, you don't need any of that. We'll put everything in a packet, but we'll give you good value. And that's the positioning of your discounter.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's something for every shopper, I suppose, is one way of looking at it. Our guest here on News Talk is James Bourke, retail expert from James Bourke and Associates. James, I want to move on to another topic. I want to ask you about Morrisons in the UK. And we've seen this story emerge over the last few weeks of few private equity companies kind of chasing this supermarket. And the logic seems to be, in part anyway, that Morrisons owns the freehold of a lot of its stores, and there may be opportunities to basically turn them into apartments or something. I mean, could something like that ever happen here, do you think?
Well, it ironically, and I accidentally mentioned Supergwin, my previous employer there, back, I suppose, around maybe we'll say 15 years ago at this stage, Supergwin was acquired by a development, and they traded as Select Retail Holdings. And that was exactly the model. At the time, we had 22 supermarkets, single stories in massive car parks, single story buildings in massive car parks. So this was very logical and made a huge amount of sense that a property view was, well, let's run the supermarket company. Let's take it site by site. You demolish the supermarket on that site. You rebuild it, but you put 14 floors of apartments or offices or something up above, and you were set to make a huge amount of money. Now, unfortunately, in that model, what happened was that we had the recession, the market fell off a cliff. And of course, if you have a model like that and it's heavily geared on borrowings, that's the risk. So the theoretical model is there. The Irish version of it that happened in the past with Supergwin proved disastrous for Select Retail Holdings because they ended up bankrupting Supergwin. And that was, of course, bought into the Super Value Group at that stage. So it's not new. And I was following with interest what was happening there, because it's so logical when you look at it. The supermarket retail,
especially
model,
in the low interest rate environment, you've got so much money looking for a home.
Yeah. And you know, when you look, supermarkets by their nature tend to be one or two story buildings. Sometimes a car park is on the roof or something like that. So, but they take up an awful big footprint, and they have a clutter of parking with them as well. Not all of them, but the majority of an estate, and particularly somebody like Morrison. So this makes a huge amount of sense. And if you look around, I suppose, the market, sites are precious now, and very often supermarkets have prime locations. They have access from motorways or roads. So it's a perfect storm. And if you were using a tick box system, you'd be ticking a lot of boxes if you said, look, what should we acquire as part of that? And Morrisons, as a retailer themselves, you know, I suppose they're that style of retailing. I was talking about Supervalue having the counters and Dunn's. That's their style of retailing. I would call them a good grocer or merchant retailer. They don't rely on just products in packets. They rely on the theater of counter and service. And so as a retail entity in their own right, they have an interesting and unique proposition as well within the UK market.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Certainly in terms of Ireland, that experience with Superquid might serve as a warning to anyone who fancies trying it here. I wanted to ask you, James, about the size of people's shopping trips, because the commentary before the pandemic I used to read a lot of was that people were doing sort of smaller shops than they used to. Maybe they were picking up a few bits on the way home from work a couple of days a week instead of doing one big shop at the weekend. And on foot of that, then the logic was, well, maybe you could have sort of a smaller store format like Tesco Express, for example. I want to get your opinion on that whole idea of smaller shops, the smaller store format, as we sit here now in the midst of a pandemic that has seen the sector boom.
Yes, now this one is hugely complex because, of course, again, the ball has been thrown up in the air here with the pandemic, and that instantly resulted in people doing much less shopping, probably a weekly shop instead of maybe popping in and out of a couple of places. So that drove the figures in the opposite direction. And I suppose equally, that convenience store model, smaller footprint, was to some degree driven by city locations as well, city centres and stuff like that, which we have no workplace operating at the moment. We know all of that story. And I suspect that many, well, more than suspect, I know that many of those smaller format stores at the moment, particularly in a city location, are struggling. Those ones in the suburbs are doing quite well. And in many cases, as people accustomed to working at home, the local convenience store, which might have been a Spa or a Londis or one of those groups, the suburban ones, actually, some of them are overtrading as a result of this. And it's exactly the point.
What does that mean, overtrading?
They would have been built and designed, and we'll pick a figure and say that one of them was doing 100,000. They may well now be doing, 120,000, because there are so many workers that are located for 3 or 4 or 5 days a week in their home, but they're consuming extra food, which would have been previously probably consumed in the workplace, in a staff restaurant or other. So that benefit has moved out to the suburbs. If you're the original question, I suppose, focused on the weekly shop and whether people were going to shop around. The behavior, I think, has changed at the moment, and it has changed to get your shopping in one place. I think it's going to be a number of years before we see an easing of that. I think people are still going to be, the habit has formed, first of all, because it's been there for quite a while. And I think it's going to take a while to break out of that. The area that is performing well now on a smaller footprint is the likes of, say, a Donnybrook Fair or a Lots and Co., where you have a smaller footprint, but you have speciality and not cheaper product. This is quality product at a different price premium. But those businesses have also accelerated over the last year. Depends on the location. If they're very much a high street location and it was convenience food, maybe not.
Location seems to be a big part of it.
It is huge part of it.
Is there a prospect of a big new entrant coming here, Sainsbury's or an Asda or something, or is that too difficult? Because look at Lidl and Aldi. I mean, they have a quarter of the market between them now.
Yes, it's a hard one to call. There's really, I suppose, they're not going to come in and start a greenfield chain, in my opinion. It's too hard. The sites are not available, so that only leaves acquisition. And it depends on the buyer, if it's a Sainsbury or an Asda or someone like that. The challenge historically has been, and we know factually that, a decade ago, Sainsbury's were terribly interested in getting into the Irish market. They did their due diligence at the time, and they couldn't find enough large format stores to satisfy their need. And many of these UK retailers are operating in towns and villages and stuff. And there's maybe 3 million people on their doorstep because of density of population. We don't have that other than Dublin. So therefore, there's a limited number of sites that they could do. And you're into critical mass and you're into supply chain and logistics and all of that. Historically, this isn't saying that it's impossible, but they've walked away. Each time they've walked away on the basis that they couldn't get the numbers right, per numbers of stores, logistics and all of that goes with it. So that may be the barrier. I suppose there's really only two companies, if you look at the selling, well, maybe three, BWG. So BWG is Spar, Londis and Mace. That's an entity of its own. Then you have Musgrave Group, which would be including food service. It would include Supervalue and Centra. That's a family business. And then you have Dunnes, and that's another family business. So theoretically, and particularly the latter two, if there was an appetite from within those families to sell the business, they're the places that it's likely to be. And one just doesn't know. Historically, we can only assume that apart from the size of sites and all of that, that there has been no appetite from within those businesses. In fact, yeah, it's the opposite. If you look at the growth rate of an expansion and investment in the estate of SuperValue, if you look in the investment that Dunnes have made, very, very strong. So it sends out counter signals to say the family are in it for the long haul.
Yeah, well, the transformation of Dunnes certainly has been absolutely unbelievable over the last few years, and it certainly seems to have paid dividends for them. The last thing I want to talk to you about is another technology question, but this time in-store technology. So we've seen, you know, you've got these self-service checkouts now in a lot of places, and then you can take it even further to what Amazon is trialing, for example, where basically there's no checkouts at all, and you sort of scan your phone when you go in, your account gets hooked up to the system, and then there's sort of a system of cameras and sensors that monitors what you take into your basket and out of the store, and you can just walk out without having to go to a checkout at all. Where do you think this whole area is going? Because it strikes me it can be a difficult balance between, you know, keeping a good sense of customer service, and then on the other hand, some people might feel, well, this is all a bit sterile and cold.
Yeah, I think it will. We have historically, all of the retailers have had different formats suiting different marketplaces, depending on where they're located. There's an absolute role for that new Amazon Fresh technology that they're using. And there will be a particular customer type in a particular geographical location that will love that. It might be more fast moving city type locations, etc. Not exclusively, but I think it will be location and maybe demographic driven. Maybe age profile might have be a factor as well. I don't see it being the total solution for every supermarket. I think while the technologies will move along all the time, like yourself scanning at the checkouts and all of those type things, I think that will continue to evolve. I think we're probably quite a distance away, perhaps a decade, before you see your mainstream supermarket being able to walk in, fill your baskets and walk out the door without going near a till. It has been slow to evolve. 15 years ago, I remember being at a food retail thing in the States with Technomic, that research company, and they had this model that was coming. And of course, that was 15 years ago, and it has taken all that time to evolve. They have the solution, but I think it will take some time for it to further evolve. Pace is much quicker. But if you're thinking of your large supermarket, I would say it'll probably take us a decade to get to that point, but I think we will be much faster in smaller format convenience stores, where really you're not going there for service in most yeah. cases, and perhaps you just want to get in and get out in a fast moving environment.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have the option. I think that's the key, and certainly a lot of the time, James, I've no interest in making small talk with anyone, so it's nice to be able to get in and get out quickly. Okay, we leave it there. Very, very interesting and comprehensive overview of the sector. James Bourke, retail expert from James Bourke & Associates, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.